So I was on retreat last week, and I thought I would share some of the teachings from that week, kind of in a very condensed way. But the theme of the week was the seven factors of awakening. And I think we often have some very lofty ideas or concepts about what enlightenment is. And I think often we think that it's some place that we have to get to, or something we have to achieve or attain. And often we get caught in thinking, wow, you know, it's just so far and so high, and that it might not even be achievable. And there's some idea that we have to do something to get there. And, you know, in this process of doing, there's something that happens magically and poof, you know, we get enlightened. And I think instead, you know, it's possible to begin to wake up in a very simple way. So the name Buddha actually has the meaning of being awake, or the meaning of to know something in a very powerful way. And wakefulness really is about that we don't hide or run away from what's here. That we open our eyes to what's around us and see the world clearly as it is. And in the story of the Buddha, you know, it's said that he was sequestered behind palace walls for a number of years, and it wasn't until he had encountered sickness, old age, and death that suddenly motivated him to look for some escape from those inevitabilities of life that we all face. But, you know, when we look at just our ordinary lives, you know, what's it like when we wake up? Let's say we've been sleeping and we've had a restful sleep and we wake up. What's it like? You know, our eyes open and maybe we take a moment or two to get our bearings. Maybe we look at the clock to see what time it is. We kind of gather our senses together and get out of bed to face the world. We kind of gain a little bit of composure and, you know, okay, here we are. And in many ways, the seven factors of awakening reflect those types of things. It's just that the terminology might seem unfamiliar. So Gill suggested substituting some common words for the seven factors. And so I'm going to introduce those a little bit and see if they make a little sense to you. So the first factor of enlightenment is mindfulness. And a simple word that Gill used to represent that is the word here. So what does it take to be here? You know, and we do that pretty easily through our day, right? There are times when we're actually here in our bodies. And we're present in the moment. So, you know, sometimes we have misconceptions about mindfulness, about it's just bringing the body and mind together into the present moment. It's not some special magical experience or quality. If we're sleepy, there can be mindfulness of sleepiness. Just as when we're awake and clear, we can have a mindfulness of being clear. And I like the, this was from a different teacher, Steve Armstrong, is the imagery of, you know, when it's a foggy day, you can be aware that it's foggy. And the things that you see through the fog may be indistinct and blurry and kind of not sharp, not clearly delineated. But you can still be aware of that. Just like when it's a beautiful sunny day like today, you know, things look very bright and brilliant and easy to see. So, you know, sometimes we assign it particular idea of mindfulness should be like this. Right? And it's really just, can we be present for what's happening in the moment? Also, it's helpful to notice the quality of that awareness. So if the mind is contracted, to actually know there's a contracted mind. Or for example, if it's foggy, to know it's foggy, as opposed to beating ourselves up trying to see things clearly when actually the conditions are it's foggy. Right? So sometimes we may have an idea, mindfulness should be, you know, clear as a bell. Right? And we should be able to see everything clearly and sharply and with distinction. Yet, if there's fog in the mind, we can't see that. So some of that is also coming back and saying, wow, what's here? What's here and what are the conditions through which I'm looking at things? If I'm looking through the fog, I need to know there's fog. Or if I have rose-colored glasses, I have to notice that the glasses are rose-colored. So often we just look through them and we forget that they're colored. We also need to apply mindfulness in a way that might be in alignment with the with our goal, right? So what's the goal? What's the context? The context is around suffering. Because we can apply mindfulness to things that have nothing to do with understanding suffering. Right? So knowing the context, you know, because sometimes people talk about mindfulness and we get an idea, oh, it's just really having this sharp attention on a particular thing, and we can do that. But, you know, having sharp attention playing Sudoku and not realizing that, you know, there's suffering occurring or something else is happening is not wise mindfulness. So we have to add wisdom to see what's happening and how is that contributing or not contributing to suffering. So the second factor of awakening is investigation. And a very common, simple word that Gil uses for that is what. So the idea is to say, what is here in this moment? What am I aware of in this moment? What is this? What is this particular experience? And so it's not rocket science. You know, we don't have to do any kind of analysis trying to find some deep meaning. It's really simply, what am I aware of? And what are those qualities? So in the moment you can be aware of that sound. And it doesn't take really any effort. It's very light. And you can notice the qualities. Oh, it was abrupt, it's loud. You can know the beginning and the ending of it. You can also know if there was a reaction. You know, there might have been some discomfort, or maybe, oh, don't like loud sounds. You can notice those things. And so that's the quality of investigation. But it's just what? What is happening? We don't need to know why, or how, or who. Just what? And the idea is to become familiar with whatever is happening without turning away from it. And so it's kind of like looking in those dark corners of the garage or the attic, and rather than turning away from it and saying, oh no, I don't want to go there, to turn the light on and go, oh, what is this? And the third quality, or the third factor, is energy. And the common word that Gil used for that is this. So the acknowledgement, this is happening. Or the recognition, this is here. So it has a quality when we actually engage with, oh, it's this. There's actually an energetic quality that comes in. Because if we don't acknowledge this, you know, we're pushing it away, and there's this quality of not engaging.
You know, when I hear you say energy, I think of the three gunas, the high energy, low energy, and just right energy. Is that what you're talking about here?
No, actually, it's more about what does it take to be here with what's happening? Not so much about, you know, there can be a quality of, for example, the energy can wane, you know, when our interest, or we're kind of like, oh, you know, what's that? You know, there's a quality in which we can make things ordinary, and we go, I'm watching my breath. I know, that's an in-breath. Mm-hmm. Had a million of them, right? And there's not a quality of what is this particular breath like. It's just the amount that just it starts to engage us into it.
Okay.
So sometimes if the mind is really sleepy and dull, it might take a little more to engage that. Sometimes it can be very effortless because we're already inquisitive, or we're already inclined to go, oh, wow, let me look at this a little more carefully. Yeah. Sometimes the word is effort, but effort has a kind of, for me, a heavier connotation, an idea of having to work or having to apply something. And sometimes that's appropriate if the mind doesn't want to be engaged. But I like the idea of saying, can I just be with this? What does it take to just be with this? To not turn away from it, not to ignore it, not to just kind of trivialize it, but to, can I be with this? In a way, it's almost like meeting someone in a very clear way, you know, like maybe seeing someone you haven't seen for a while, and you kind of, oh, I haven't seen this person in a while, and I want to just kind of take this person in. What's this person like? I noticed there's, you know, we've both aged, or we've changed, or whatever it is. It's that quality of engaging.
I call it piquing my interest.
Yeah. So it's just that little bit.
Yeah.
But it's not so much that it becomes a heaviness.
Right.
So that's what that's what I'm talking about in terms of energy.
Okay.
The fourth factor is joy. And you might kind of go, how can I have joy in the midst of something that might be difficult? Okay. But Gil uses the word yes. And it's a way of acknowledging, yes, this is happening. Yes, I'm with it. And in that way, there's a little spark of joy that can sometimes arise in just meeting it. You know, even though it's hard, yes, I'm with it. Yes, I'm here. It's that quality. It's not the idea. Sometimes joy gives you the idea, oh, it has to be like this real happy, bubbly kind of quality. And so I think the idea of yes, the quality of, oh, it's, you know, I'm here. And there's a little lightness that comes of just saying, yes, I can be here. So it's not this ebullient, overflowing kind of quality. I think sometimes we overrate joy. Mm-hmm. And we think joy has to be this rapturous, blissful kind of state.
Oh, man, as if you do that.
Yeah. So joy can actually have a very subtle quality to it. Mm-hmm. So the remaining factors actually precede or arise from these other factors. So those first four that I mentioned actually are things that we can influence or cultivate or bring to our practice. So for example, we can instill that little bit of energy, that little engagement quality, the piqued interest. We can bring the investigation, what is this, into our experience. We can influence whether we're present here, now. And then the idea of being with it, so this joy can kind of come in. So these other three factors are calm, concentration, and equanimity. And so calm might be reflected in a very common word, which is relax. So as in relaxing with what's happening, or relaxing around what's happening. So we might notice, for example, wow, there's tension in the body. Can I just relax with it? Can I just be at ease with that? In a way, it's kind of like once we've figured out, oh, this is what's happening, then we can relax. You know, it's that quality of having something unknown, and once you know what it is, oh, it's okay. I can now relax. Good. It's no longer the unknown dark monster in the corner, I've turned the light on and I've looked at it and I go, oh, it's just an empty box. In concentration, Gil used the word collect. So the idea is the mind and body get collected around the experience. Another word might be composure. So we gain our composure. Yeah, so when we see what's around us, we're here, we see what's happening, we're with it. We kind of go, oh, I know what it is now, I can relax. And then we gain our composure. It's like gaining our balances, gaining that stableness. And the last factor is equanimity. And Gil says that his favorite phrase for equanimity, it's an all-American phrase, and that's, it's okay.
It's almost an international phrase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's about that everything is okay. It's not being indifferent, and it's not turning away, but knowing it's all okay. It's all a part of this experience of being human and meeting whatever's here. So when these factors are present, we're here, we know what this is, we acknowledge, yes, this is what it is. And so in doing so, we relax, we gain our composure and realize it's okay. And we breathe easily.
Simple.
So what happens when we're at ease? What's not present when we're at ease?
Tension. Stress.
Suffering. As simple as that. When we're at ease, there's no suffering. So, when all those seven factors are present, we can be fully awake and free of suffering. So it's not some grandiose Big Bang enlightenment. It's something actually very ordinary. And it can happen to us, you know, many times through the day. We just don't notice. It's really simple. And so the idea in this practice is about stringing these moments together, right? So the more we string them together, the more freedom we have.
Those phrases down. I just need a handout. Put them on my board at work.
I'll put them on the website.
Yeah, okay, even better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what gets in the way of having all of these seven factors present?
That grasping mind.
Self involvement.
Our ego.
It's all about
our ego.
The ego, yeah.
So, you know, calm can't arise when we're not relaxed, right? And relaxation means letting go in many different ways. It means letting go of an agenda of attaining something or doing something. Yeah, it's the grasping on to having to have a particular result. It also means letting go of contraction around an experience. It means letting go of self-identification with what's happening. We can't hold on to anything because all things are impermanent. But we often get an idea, my experience should be like this, or I should be able to make this happen. Right? It should be a certain way. Sometimes we think meditation should be easy. And so when it's hard, we struggle with it because we have an idea, we have a concept of how it should be.
That goal-oriented, I have to be at some stage instead of just where I'm at.
And we get caught in the I. I am doing this, I should be this way. I am a bad meditator. Or I'm stupid, or I'm clumsy, or I can't do this. Anytime you notice these I statements, it's a clue or a hint that you're holding on to some idea about how things should be, or you're appropriating something. It's my meditation, or it's my space, or it's whatever it might be. Can we relax around the experience and just be with it? So we can start to see just how much we have ideas, you know. We have comparisons. We have the comparing mind. Right? That person looks better in their meditation than I do. Right? It's really interesting on retreat, you know, you sit with people for a whole week. It's interesting what you pick up, or what things happen in the mind. You start to notice if there's comparison. And also, I mean, you know, at the end of a retreat, I've had it happen, and I do the same thing. You know, I go up to somebody, I go, wow, you were just really sitting really strong, and you must have been really great. And they start laughing, and they're like, oh, you know, I was having the hardest time, and I was struggling all this time. Or someone will tell me, wow, you know, you're just so still. And, you know, but they didn't see me the times that I was, you know, squirming and fidgeting and whatnot, right? And so we get these different ideas, and we cause suffering because we've compared. And we've said, oh, I want to be like this, or I'm not like this, or that person is, you know, further along than I am. And we create all of this, yeah, all of this struggle around just being with things as they are, rather than trying to grasp at some idea of how things should be. And there's something that's really interesting. We can strengthen our mindfulness by just noticing its presence when it's here. And so, for example, whenever we're lost, the moment that we remember or notice I'm lost, that's actually mindfulness. We didn't make that happen. Okay? Because when we're lost. By definition, you're lost. See, you can't come into a lost state and somehow willfully go, okay, I need to be mindful. There's actually a moment in which you wake up from the lost place that you're in. That waking up is mindfulness. And so, can you notice just that? You know, what happens, we usually go, I'm lost, oh, I'm supposed to be on the breath. And we yank the mind back to, oh, I'm supposed to be on the breath, instead of realizing, I'm really mindful in this moment. What's that like? What's the quality of that? What's being known in that moment? And then the idea is to cultivate that. Not hold on to it, because that also causes a lot of stress. We go, oh, it should be like this. And then so we try to drag that into holding on. But instead, can we notice, oh, it's like this. So then the next time when that happens, you recognize it. And each time that you recognize it, it's like reinforcing it. It's going, oh, this is good. Instead of hitting it like, you know, the whack-a-mole thing. There it is. And then it doesn't want to come back. up because you're yanking it, right? So the idea is to notice it and then to go, wow, what is that quality like? For example, for me, sometimes it's just the quality of opening my heart and just being, and literally saying, can I be here and accept what comes? It's almost like a receptive quality, but a quality of just really saying, oh, I'm here. And so if we can notice those, the more often we notice consciously that it's here, we're literally strengthening the occurrence of it happening more. So the other thing is, we can't be here when we're caught up remembering and replaying the past. You know, I think so much we try to fix our past. You know, we forget that we can't change what's happened. You know, Jack Kornfield says, forgiveness is giving up all hope of a happy past. And literally, we have to let go of trying to redo what's been done. You know, often we replay whatever happened and we're like, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that, you know, or I should have said this, or I should have said that. And we forget that we can't alter that.
It's that learn. But keep it in mind, because not to make that same mistake or that same occurrence. I hate to say mistake.
Yeah, but how often do you have to refresh that? You really don't have to keep replaying it and going, oh, I have to remember this, I have to remember this, I have to remember this. It's just a matter of understanding that, you know, this particular thing has passed. And so rather than being pulled into the past so that you're not present for here, is to say, oh, where do I need to be? I need to be here. Now, it could be that you're here and you understand, oh, here I am in the process of remembering the past. But the idea is not to be lost in it. You know, the same thing with getting caught in planning and that rehearsing of, oh, what, you know, I'm going to, when I see this person, I'm going to say blah, 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 right? How often? I guarantee you that most likely whatever happens is not what you rehearsed. So here you are wasting a lot of energy and a lot of anxiety and not being present for here, planning for something that certainly isn't going to come out the way you're planning. And sometimes it's hard to rouse joy. And so is there a way that we can say yes to our experience without... Okay. Did you lock the door?
I will lock it.
Thanks.
Right. Okay.
Thanks. So can we not fall into the experience and not push it away? To say yes to each breath in each moment without clenching or grasping, without letting the compulsivity of our habits yanking us one way or another. What I like to think of it as is partly accepting all of the pieces of ourselves, the good and the bad. Because often it's, we see something in ourselves that we dislike and we push it away. And we don't want to be with it because that's something that doesn't fit in our idea of, you know, how we should be, that we should be this good person all the time. And here's these thoughts of whatever, murderous rage or things that come into our experience that trigger those pieces of us. And so is there a way that we can meet those parts that we dislike and acknowledge them as this is also part of me. Because if we think about the idea of collecting and gathering our composure, if we cut a part of us off, we're not whole. We're not all together. We're fractured. So is there a way that we can offer kindness to those pieces that we don't like? And again, you know, that plays into rousing energy. You know, the idea of having an intention to open our heart to the painful things. You know, I believe that when we hold things with an open heart, there's an expression of kindness or love, kind of like meeting somebody that you know, that's a friend. When our hearts are closed, it's a little bit like meeting somebody who's a stranger or an enemy, and you're kind of always on guard and you're suspicious. So is there a way to meet our experience so that we're not on guard, but open? So I wanted to share something that was kind of my condensation of the whole retreat that I wrote down in my little notebook and kind of summed it up in a couple lines. Love is born each time the intention is made to open the heart to whatever is here. Freedom is found when the heart doesn't hold on. So Gill sometimes talks about the concept of rope burn. So if you hold on to a rope and the rope gets pulled out of your hands, the harder you hold on, the more rope burn you get. So if the rope is going to be pulled away and you let go, you don't get burned. And in a way, that's what suffering is about. The suffering is when we hold on tightly and the rope is going because of impermanence, or that it's not self, or that it's unsatisfactory. Can we open our hand or open our heart so that we don't hold on? So I'm going to leave you with two questions. What do you need to cultivate to have an open heart? And what gets in the way of letting go? And then I have one little poem to read. And it's called This Moment. And it's by Benjamin Dean. This moment, when compared to remembered moments, is boring. But if I look closely at all remembered moments, I find them just as boring and for the same reason. The missing moment, the beautiful moment, the perfect moment, where all is fine, does not exist. It must be created by taking any boring moment, like this current moment, and realizing quite clearly that the only thing preventing this moment from being that beautiful moment, that special moment, is the act of comparison. One must embrace this boring moment and make it that special moment. Otherwise, it will never exist. So have a couple of minutes, and then I've got to go pretty quickly because I have an appointment, but I'm willing to entertain any comments or questions. Or
I've been listening to Eckhart Tolle's, there's a book on tape, mm-hmm. on subject presence, I think that's the title, and this has been nice, but this is much more attainable. His stuff is a little out there, and it's like, oh yeah, and I feel like I'm able to use some of it, but I like Gil's simple
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, and it really is
more
that
accessible.
Simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get this mm-hmm. grandiose concept that here's enlightenment, and it's way over here or somewhere, you know, so unattainable and so hard. And yet, you know, I guarantee you'll find at least one moment in a day, if not more, in which there's some freedom.
And even labeling them freedom, that almost is, if we could do it without the labels, it would be great. We can't at this level. I still need the words.
Uh-huh.
But to somehow get beyond the word freedom, that limits it somehow
uh-huh.
in my head.
So maybe you could use a word like, not being caught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when are the times, when are the times in the day when I'm not actually caught? When I have a choice? Because really, freedom is the ability to choose how you respond in a given moment.
That's what I think, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
the ability to choose.
But it's the actual being able to step out of being caught so that you have the possibility of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we react, there's no choice.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just reaction. Mm-hmm. You know, experience comes in and we clench, or experience mm-hmm. comes in and we grasp,
mm-hmm.
or experience comes in and we turn away. Greed, hatred, delusion. And it's when experience comes in and we go, oh, here's the experience. And to see it clearly, that it's not who you are, it's not a possession, it's impermanent,
mm-hmm.
and it's changing. And you can actually see it as just the experience. Then there's not a sense of caughtness. You know, and really, the measure, I think, is there suffering? Sometimes we don't recognize that, because suffering can be very subtle. It can be just a movement of the mind to want it to be interesting. You know, we sit in meditation and we think, oh, is this all there is? I want some bright lights, or I want something else. That's
yeah.
suffering.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that movement of, oh, I think I should be doing something.
Not enough. Yeah.
Not enough.
Mm-hmm.
More. Or, you know, where's the whatever it is, the goodies. Okay. So noticing those moments, and even noticing the moments when it's pleasant. You know, we overlook that.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm.
But so often we get something that's pleasant and then we're looking to hold on to it, or how can I get more, or I'm afraid to let this go. You know, and I think that's very hard. The afraid to let it go is a challenge.
Yeah.